everybody. Welcome to the UUMA podcast. And I am so excited to be hosting Neto Hollister today. Hey, how are you, Neto?
I'm well. Hi.
And we are going to be talking about Sacred Fire UU and all kinds of cool projects. And I was thinking of looking up like your deets and doing this formal introduction, but then I thought, nah, I'm just going to ask him to introduce himself. So would you introduce yourself with the pertinent information and also one interesting thing?
Huh, okay, sure. I'm Rev Nathan Hollister. Everybody calls me Nato, and I've been a UU minister for over a decade. I'm a third generation UU, so I was raised in the church, really active grandparents who founded multiple congregations and fellowships across the country, and was really involved in youth leadership nationally from when I was very young and then up and became a minister. And most of my focus has been in my ministry has been planting covenanted communities, which are akin to congregations, but have a lot of leeway in terms of form. But I think they provide much the same function, which is connecting people, grounding people, opportunities for growth, connection, and jumping off point for social justice work, supportive communities of mutual aid and the like. So most of the things that we might get from our congregations, and I think that there's a lot of folks out there who resonate with UU values, UU theology, and UU action, but aren't necessarily looking for church. So this is kind of a bringing church to them, what would be called a missional way of doing UU ministry. So that's been my focus. Also have a very strong social justice background. I've been a community organizer in a lot of different capacities, union organizer, tenant organizer, racial justice organizer. And so I have also been bringing that, and I have a curriculum that we'll talk about in a moment that I've been developing for quite a long time, over a decade again. And we use this curriculum for a couple of different things in the past, and then we'll talk about what we're using it for now. But in the past, it's been the core curriculum for our covenanted communities that people go through. It develops leadership, theological grounding, and the like, and gets people to know each other. We use a small group ministry format, which my mom taught me how to do, and it's been really a wonderful way of doing things. I also have done in the past a few sessions with ministerial colleagues, which is just absolutely wonderful and joyful and a learning experience for everybody, especially me. And it's really a passionate part of my ministry. And we've worked with a few dozen congregations with this curriculum to increase and deepen their impact in social justice and racial justice work. And we designed it so that it would really bolster the work that's already going on in congregations. So this isn't another thing or a new thing, a new endeavor. It's to bolster and strengthen what is happening already. So in that regard, the purpose of it is to support congregations and support the good work that we're already doing, not add a new thing, but kind of amplify what they're doing already.
A booster shot,
if you will. Yeah.
I like that. I want to ask you more about that, but let me backtrack for a minute to ask you first, how did you first decide to do this ministry of Sacred Fire UU communities? Like at what point in your ministerial formation and or organizing life did you decide, yeah, not exactly the parish thing, but adjacent? Can you tell me the story of how this came to be?
Yeah, two pieces. One, a lot of the folks I know share our UU values, but aren't going to go to church. They might after being involved in one of our communities, and that's cool. In fact, that's wonderful. But they're not really looking for church, but they're looking for the stuff we do, in a sense. So looking around, I wanted to create something that through which those folks could get involved and could find one of the things I've found growing up Unitarian Universalist, and kind of an on-ramp in a sense, different kinds of communities that people can take part in and co-create So it was just looking around and saying, what can I build that's a container for what's already there, but that the container that is not currently created by church, you know, as we do church.
Yeah, yeah. Was it during seminary?
I've always been a community builder. And so it was just kind of focused and strengthened through divinity school and through ministerial development. And then the other piece, of course, is I think we can do much, much better in our work for social justice. Like I said, I come from a long background of doing that, and I feel like I'm a lifelong student of social transformation. Mm-hmm. And I have made a study of things that work, things that don't work, and I have a lot of critiques of the way we're doing things and have a lot of applause for the way we're doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, put those together and we can strengthen what we don't got or develop what we don't got and strengthen mm-hmm. what we do got.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece is, in my experience as an organizer since I was a teenager, the conclusion that I've come to is that with regard to the way we change the world is small groups of people building alternatives.
Mm.
So small groups of theologically grounded, connected folks in community working to create alternatives as part of a vision of the life that we want to see, the world we want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons why we use a small group ministry methodology. And that's really the only thing that I've ever seen truly change the world.
Mm.
I spent a lot of time as a community organizer and, you know, just saying, you know, if everybody just showed up to the march, or if everybody just voted, or if everybody just got to this meeting, then things would change. Or even if everyone knew about this awful thing, it would change. None of those things are true. None of them. And I learned that, you know, the hard way, you know, of effort over and over and over. But mm-hmm. none of those things are true. And that's not just my experience, my personal experience, but also the literature. And I come from a political science, sociology, and economics background. Mm-hmm. The literature supports that. These things don't work in themselves. They're part of a puzzle. But that thing, if only everybody just did, you know, got to this meeting or whatever. No. And so I was forced by learning this over and over and over until I finally accepted it, that you work with the folks who are in the room and you create something which you can together. And sometimes I talk about it, you know, get your four best friends together and do something.
Mm.
So it can be as simple as that. And that works well with unchurched people who, you know, who are just looking for something to do, something different, a better world in any way, shape or form, large and small. So yeah, that's a big piece of it.
That's exciting. I appreciate you framing that. And so what you're talking about is what then became the curriculum, right? Like all of your study and all of the what works, what doesn't work, how do we want to do this differently is how now you have this curriculum that you offer folks. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a few pieces to that. One is that we don't do super great. And I totally include myself in this. That's why it's part of my ministry is to try and take my best guess at it. Is we don't have a very strong systematic theology for Unitarian Universalism.
Mm-hmm.
We've got hints at it. We've got a lot of content there, but solidifying it into something that can really be a power in the world is a different question. And so I developed the curriculum with that in mind, that I think we need a stronger backbone. And a lot of that was inspired by James Luther Adams, the Unitarian minister and social ethicist, who, I'll just tell a real short vignette, he wrote the essay Guiding Principles for the, you know, Liberal Religion, which I think is a good beginning of a scaffolding for some systematic theology for us. But in his work, he went in the 30s to Germany, and he interviewed ministers, theologians, and academics, and liberal leaders of all sorts. And he interviewed them about the rise of fascism and Nazism at the time. And he came away with the conclusion that liberalism, as it is, does not have the backbone to stand up against fascism. And I wholeheartedly agree. And so another piece to this course was trying to collectively grow that theological backbone. And I think one of the ways we do that is drawing for the lessons that we are being taught from liberation theology traditions, and trying to listen to those voices and have them inform a stronger theology for us that can actually move the world. The other piece is we have these theologies, we have our principles and whatnot, but the way we actually put them into action is also lacking. So bringing my long history of community organizing, the curriculum was designed to pair those theologies, which are very powerful in our hearts, with power in our hands. So connecting those theologies to actually, okay, well, what does that look like in the world? And even down to the nuts and bolts of what does that look like in the day-to-day? What does that look like in Sunday morning worship? What does that look like in our small group ministry programs? What does that look like in our approach to our social justice partnerships in larger communities, in the greater community? It asks the question, how might we engage in this work as Unitarian Universalists? What makes that be apart from just doing it, you know? So what would it look to do it as Unitarian Universalists, informed by our theology, our history, our tradition, and the like?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And what do you want people to know about who should take this curriculum?
Well, I'm really overjoyed to be offering the curriculum through the UUMA. I'm just so, so excited. And like I said, I learn at least as much as participants, and I'm excited to meet more people and learn and grow with them as well. Maybe even the majority of my ministerial colleagues and other ministers that I was with in school, and ministers just who have been ministers for a long time, especially when the political climate shifted in a number of different ways, from Trump and anti-LGBT and refugee people and all these different things that came to the fore, I had a lot of my colleagues and fellow students and others come to me and say, my congregation is asking me to be a community organizer. I don't know how to do that. I know how to be a minister, a pastor, a prophet, and I'm good on that. But they're asking me for some things that aren't in the skill set that we're taught during ministerial formation. So this course is looking for folks who want to have some of the community organizing skills to couple with their ministerial work in a way that can serve their congregations better and serve the world better. So that's a big piece of it. One of the things I put out is that my folks that have taken the course in the past have said by and large that this course gives them sermon ideas for the whole year. So if I can offer that up, I could even put a guarantee on it. You will get sermon topics from this. So that is the gift that we give to one another when we get together for these discussions is right. We're inspiring a lot of sermons. So that I know comes as a relief to me whenever I'm like, that'll preach.
Yes.
I immediately write it down because we want to capture these things. And to have a group that is very diligently and in a directed, deliberate way, speaking deeply about a lot of these issues, our theologies, our social justice, and everything in between, how we are interdependent with one another, to all the way to how can we best be in solidarity with folks as you use.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a lot of sermon ideas from it. So that's an added bonus, and I'll guarantee it.
All right. That's excellent.
I don't know if that sounds weird, but
no,
that's what everyone has said. So that's cool.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. And I didn't know it before I did it. I learned it after. Everybody's like, this is great. I'm set for the year.
And
ministers that want to deepen their faith, sort of a longing for the study and reflection, collective study and reflection that we had in many of our divinity school experiences.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this can continue some of that. I know I miss it and I relish it. I thrive on it.
Yeah.
So folks who are interested in that and just collegial conversations about stuff that is real. And what I seek to create with us is not just talking about the theory and the theology, but like, what does this look like this week in your congregation? Mm-hmm. Or what does this look like in your community ministry work on the day-to-day? So not just really big, cool concepts, which we will talk about, but also what does that actually look like? So for instance, in our covenanted communities around the country, we talk some about, you know, being part of the interdependent web of all existence. And we say, okay, that's awesome. That's really neat. What does that look like on a Tuesday morning when your kid is sick and the car won't start and you got to like pick up meds or something? What does our lived interdependence look like?
Right.
Between the members of our community, our congregations, and the like, what does it really mean to be interdependent on a random Tuesday morning with a sick kid? So I really want to go all the way to that, not just that, yay, we're interdependent, awesome, but to say, yeah, how can we strengthen and invoke that interdependence in our ministries and in our daily lives even?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. Right on. I'm wondering if this would also be a valuable course for people to take when they have this like anxious, I need to do something, given this rise of fascism piece. I heard you say earlier that your work was inspired by James Luther Adams' work. And I was struck by the phrase lacking a backbone. Can you say a little bit more about why does liberalism lack a backbone?
I can say a lot more. Yes. Excuse me. Well, let's go back to the first part of what you were starting to say, the anxiety piece. This course and this collective endeavor, because it's not just me, I'm just facilitating, but right. It's really us doing it together. It's designed to make that anxiety melt away. And I mean that very, very directly. And I don't mean we have, you know, all the answers and we make the things that are making us anxious go away. But the course and these discussions give us an understanding, especially, you know, the pieces on how politics work, how change is made, how resistance is strengthened, allows us to see what's going on and not just react to it and not just be in this fight or flight, high cortisone levels that we've been in since, you know, Trump and before. And that many of us with different life experiences and with marginalized people and people who have experienced historical oppressions always operate or are forced to by the world to operate at these levels. Having an understanding of how power functions in society and the histories of movements and leaders that have gone before, what they can teach us and being bolstered by that. And also just an understanding of social change and political change and all that stuff allows us not to just be hit by news items all the time and be like, oh, you know, this is awful. What are we going to do? And then that feeling of helplessness that we don't know what to do. We know what we want to do. We know what we want to have happen, but we don't know how to do it. So, and I'll take something just blasé, like we want to get rid of the Electoral College. I'm like, cool. I'm right there with you. What's the first step? How would we actually make that happen? How would we get to, you know, if you're throwing all your, you know, see bumper stickers and things online, get rid of the Electoral College. When we get down to it, we need to ask the question, what would it take to get 31 state legislative bodies to vote to change the U.S. Constitution to eliminate the Electoral College? That's what we're actually talking about. What does that look like? What does it look like in your state, in your state legislature? Let's get to it. I'm all with you, but let's you know. So a lot of us, we know what we might want, but we feel helpless to do anything about it. And a lot of that is because we don't know how. How's the first step? And I'm not here to tell the answers of how, but exactly how. But I'll at least say, here's how we might begin to find out together or figure out or experiment with. And I teach the course from the perspective of, with all my experience and life lived and things that other leaders have taught me in the movement and in ministry, this is still my current best guess. So I come to it with that thing, and I come to learn and to listen and all that. So that anxiety piece is going through this process is designed to give a sense of calm and understanding of what's happening, and then an idea of how to begin a response to it and not feeling both anxious and helpless. So that's a huge, huge piece to this. So that's one. On the other piece, I can talk a little bit about that backbone or lack of backbone in liberalism. There's a few, I'll just focus on one for now because this is a little bit of a shorter format. But in the UUA's current social justice handbook that you can find on the UUA website, there's a description near the beginning about how society works and how change happens. And what it does is it says there's these kind of stakeholders and different entities in society that have wants and needs. And those can be like banks and unions and schools, churches, businesses, different nonprofit organizations, NGOs, and all these different institutions in society, and they're competing for influence in the public square. So this is our story about how change is made and how we work out change. We compete in the public square with these other interests, and then the government serves as sort of a referee, listening to these different influences and kind of deciding and making decisions based on what they get in the public square. So that's what I hear a lot of our dialogue in UUism is about, you know, our witness in the public square and that sort of thing. And that's in the UUA handbook on social justice. In fact, that model of how change happens in society is in sociology is called social functionalism, structural functionalism. And structural functionalism was completely kicked out of the sociology field in 1959, saying this is absolutely not how stuff works. And it was replaced mostly by conflict theory, which says, you know, folks are not jostling and having an open dialogue for influence, but it's for power. These interests are competing for power, and that the government is not an impartial referee. The government's in on it too. So really a lot of the dialogue that I see in UU circles and in our literature is about that witnessing in public space and seeking influence. So I think that that's completely wrongheaded, and I think we're losing because of it. So the right is organizing for power. They always have been. And they're beating us at it. They're playing a different game. We're seeking influence, and they're building power. We need to be building power. And a lot of times we, you know, in our liberal tradition, which is a wonderful and proud one, one that I'm really humbled to be part of, we seek things like open dialogue and hearing both sides. So here's both sides of something. Alt-right folks want genocide and totalitarianism. I, on the other side, you know, want no genocide and no enslavement of people.
Please.
So the liberal mindset is like, let's hear both sides and compromise. So what's compromise there? Murdering some people? You know, controlling some aspects of our lives completely and not, like, that's unacceptable as well. Denying humanity of folks is not a viable political stance to be involved in our dialogue.
Right.
Just no. And I think liberals need to be better about saying like that, no, that is not a viable, you know, basis for dialogue in any way, shape or form. So I can add another piece is, you know, from finding a backbone and learning this through experience and all, you know, all the time from teachers, is I've been involved in Antifa, which is a tactic, not an organization, but involved in Antifa tactics since I was 13, when me and my Why Are You Friends got beat up by Nazis out of a punk show, outside of a punk show. So I've been involved in anti-fascist organizing for 30 years now, and continue to do so. And we can talk about, you know, the ins and outs of what that looks like, but I think it tracks with my point about seeking power, not influence. And also, if alt-right or fascists or neo-Nazis are actively organizing for genocide and enslavement and totalitarianism, we have to stop them, period. So, you know, fascism is violence, is always violence. So stopping the growth and organizing of fascism, I think, is one way that we do that. That involves risk a lot of times. I was about 20 feet away from getting hit by that car in Charlottesville, you know, and hopefully we're not going to be in risk like that. But I will say here that we talk about solidarity and wanting to be in solidarity with folks. Well, the definition of solidarity is that we take on the risk that other people are experiencing and are exposed to. So you really need to have some skin in the game to use that phrase, and actually put yourself at risk. And that means your money, your social status, your relationships, your, you know, any aspect of your lives. To really be in solidarity with folks, you need to be putting yourself in their positions and exposing yourselves to some of the oppressions that they are in order to fight it, and in order to have ears that will hear as folks who are experiencing these oppressions try to tell us about them and try to tell us their experiences. So that's another piece is kind of, that's a little snippet of what we'll talk about of the liberal response or the classical liberal approach to social change and critiquing it and having some fruitful debate and discussion in there. I love it. And really learning from each other with the focus on how can we do our best ministry? How can we serve our congregations best? How can we serve the world best? And how can we cast this vision of the beloved community and take steps or you know, etch out steps for those who come behind us to move in those directions?
I love it.
Me too.
I am like, yeah, I'm signing up for this class. I'm very excited to engage more deeply in the things that you just raised in the past few minutes, because you're right. I don't have a community organizing preparation and understanding of the world. And right when you were at the beginning, when you were talking about the government as a referee, I was like, that's not right. I know that's not right. Like, my body knows that that's not right. But I think that I have shied away from Antifa approaches or conversations about conflict because I am more conflict avoidant. So that's an interesting edge for me to explore. Like, I come from a space of violence in my home, right? So, like, right. Growing up. So I'm very anti-violence.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Like, how do I engage those? How do I engage my trauma and the need to be strong and unflinching is the word that comes to mind. Like yeah. Truly, like, engage solidarity in a way that is real and powerful. Some solidarity, I don't have options because it's my siblings. So I'm there. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But others, I do have class privilege, especially, and I have choices to make. And so I think these conversations are going to help me dig deeper into all of that. And I think that would be very valuable because it's been a while since I've had a deeper conversation about my values and the way they dance with each other and how I make sense of what I do and why I do it and what I don't do.
Yeah. Well, I want to just acknowledge bringing experiences of trauma, experiences of oppression, either inside of our families, outside of our families, in the community, because that's huge. So I want to just acknowledge that, and that and say that that's exactly what I think we need. If we're looking at this curriculum as a collective endeavor,
yep.
That's exactly the things we need to be brought in by us participants to really dig into that in ways and say like, yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And so bringing those things to the curriculum is I think really important. And I do want to say that like, while Antifa tactics are something that I have personally landed on, that's not what the course is about. It's just part of a discussion. And I, in the course, defined anti-violence as something different from non-violence. Mm-hmm. So anti-violence in my definition is we believe in stopping violence. So, but we can go into that more, and that those are good discussions to have. So that said, I will just to say this course is not about Antifa. It's just that can be something we talk about if we need to, if people bring that to the table, if we want to, if we think it'll be fruitful in our work and in our ministries. The thing that we will focus on that's related to that is tactics. So what tactics need to be used? And we draw from some literature that I'll definitely will share with the group and go all through it, but that lists out 200 different nonviolent forms of civil disobedience. And often when we sit down and think about it, we can think of a handful or two, or we'll say, you know, vote and call your senator. And that doesn't work. So we'll talk about this plethora of strategies of nonviolent civil disobedience that we can go to and kind of broaden our minds as to what is possible. But then going deeper, there was a study done of those 200 forms of nonviolent civil disobedience to say which ones work. And they went through the history of social movements and what strategies and tactics they used to say like which one of these really works. And this is the coolest thing that they found out. And we'll share these books and this literature with participants in the course and anybody who asks me. But what they found is that all of the tactics work, but none of the tactics work alone.
Right.
So sure, vote. Sure, write your senator. But don't delude yourself into thinking that that's going to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two tactics among many, many, many. And also just the difference between tactics as individual endeavors and collective endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're worried about, you know, water usage, we can do things like taking shorter showers and not running the faucet while we're brushing our teeth. Sure, do that as a good human, but it's not going to do anything with regard to climate change.
Right.
And I do mean it's not going to do anything. So municipal water usage is 20% of total water usage. So if all of us just quit showering altogether, it still wouldn't make a difference. This takes collective action on a very large scale. And neoliberalism, the conservative, you know, outlook on the world and political philosophy. So I know it can be confusing, liberal and neoliberal, but neoliberalism has us thinking as much as possible as individuals, and it really heightens the individualism that came from our liberal tradition, but it takes it to this awful destructive level which we've seen, and we'll talk about that theologically and in our histories and the like. But neoliberalism has us convinced that if we each do our little part, we will save the environment.
Right.
And that it's on me to recycle and make sure that, you know, I always recycle to save the planet. It's not. Like, yes, recycle, even though 80% of recycled materials aren't actually recycled, and a huge percentage of them are shipped to other countries to be processed on you know, large cargo ships. And like, we won't go into all that detail, right, unless someone brings it up in the course. But the point is, it takes collective action on a much larger scale. And we think we're doing our own little part. And I'm not saying it's bad to do your part, but I am saying it is bad to think that that's it, or to think that that's going to make monumental change.
Yes, absolutely. I think that turn towards community care, community action, and a much more complex understanding of how that happens is also fundamentally anti-racist. Like, it's fundamentally decentering white supremacy culture characteristics that are really driving that individualism, I'm the only one, I need to be a hero. No, that's not the way.
Yeah, 100%. And it's also from liberation theology, which comes from the, you know, Latin American Catholic movement and the Black American Protestant movement. And one of the biggest differences between liberal theology and liberation theology is that liberal theology usually puts ending oppression as an individual thing.
Yeah.
Work on our white supremacy on ourselves, which of course we should do. Liberation theology says that it's a response to collective oppression, and it's a collective response to that oppression. And that's another piece that I think we need to draw into this backbone as we mentioned earlier, that liberalism needs is really, like you said, those lessons from the historically marginalized and oppressed communities, and is part of our anti-racism and dismantling white supremacy work. And so I'll use this as a thing. The first session, so the course is 8 different sessions that we're going to do every other week. There's readings in between that are optional. They just allow you to bring more if you want to go deeper. There's suggested readings and, you know, videos or speeches or whatever to listen to if you like. And there's also things to reflect upon if you want to put time aside to do so. Or just show up with what you got. That's the number one thing. So you can say.
You were going from liberation theology to the structure of the course. And I think you were going to talk about the first session.
Yes. I have to say that the first session does have a large part of it where we re-up on our anti-racism and dismantling white supremacy stuff. Many of us have learned it before. I mean, I hope if you're a minister, that needs to be central to your ministry, and otherwise we'll need to chat about that. But that's in the first session of the course, because we need reminders. I need reminders. I need to learn new things and open up a forum with my colleagues to have that as part. And we also will be using that, of course, as a lens for everything else. So when Sacred Fire UU does this curriculum with congregations, we get together in person for a first weekend, and that weekend is almost entirely anti-racism, because it's a prerequisite for everything else. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about exactly why that is in the course. So I'll say one other piece about that is many of us and our colleagues are very heavily involved in the work of anti-racism, very formally. And that's wonderful, and that's needed, and please join the course so you can teach me more. So I don't want people to balk at like, oh, the first session's going to have like anti-racism stuff I've heard before. One, bring stuff to the table that we haven't heard before. That's what I'm asking for. But two, in teaching the course, some of the material in the course you might know. You might know more than me, and that would be wonderful. That's what I assume that people involved will know more about most of the things we'll talk about. But that's why I'm so inspired to do the course. This is my ministry too. This is my growth too. So what I do in teaching the course, since y'all will know more about a lot of these things, is teach it on two levels. One, deliver the content, but two, also deliver it in a certain way that you might learn from as a minister and teacher. Like, oh, that's another way of putting this thing. I could try that. Or that's another pedagogical model for how to get this information together. Or that's a way I knew that in my head. This is a way to know it in my heart. Mm-hmm. So it's teaching on two levels, the content and also how to teach and how to interact with our congregants and the people we work with in our nonprofits or whatever else around this material. So there's a big element of leadership and pedagogy for ministers, you know, all built into the course.
Yeah, it sounds like praxis at its best.
Yeah, it's all practice. Praxis, excuse me, it's all praxis.
Right on. That's great. Well, I'm very excited. I think several people are going to be very excited after hearing this recording.
I hope so.
What else do you want to say before we sign off? Anything else that is lingering for you?
I'm just excited to meet and connect with more colleagues, and even more excited to see how we can support each other in doing this work and seeing how it plays out in our congregations and in our world. That's my calling. That's what I'm excited for. I want to meet you, and I want to experiment and work and be in dialogue and learn from one another on how to do these things. And I want to change everything.
Yes. Strategic risks for the win. Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you for spending time with us, Netta. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Julika. This is great.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and stay tuned for more information.
All right. Bye, everyone.